This is MFG Out Loud. Courageous conversations about sales and marketing for today's manufacturers. With your hosts, Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore.
Ray and Allison here with you today, and have we got a special guest. We have with us today Mr. Damon Pastulka, who is the co-founder of Exit Your Way, I'll explain what that is in a second, managing partner with Cross Northwest, and the host of a weekly business roundtable that is nothing short of amazing, and we'll tell you how to get to that as well. Damon helps product, manufacturing, e-commerce, and construction businesses. He helps their owners grow, prepare, and sell their businesses, typically for twice the money at a 90% success rate. So that right there, anybody that's ever talked to a business broker, private equity guy, or whatever, we're going to talk about how Damon's not like that. He actually gets results. Damon is not a spreadsheet jockey, which is where we kind of bonded. He's a hands-on business builder that happens to have spent a lot of years in the investor and private equity-owned business arena. He knows how to create meaningful, sustainable value for companies. He's a generous networker, prolific LinkedIn contributor, highly sought-after podcast guest, and all-around nice guy, and we're so thrilled to have you here. Damon, welcome to MFG Out Loud.
Well, thanks, Ray and Allison, for having me here. I'm like, wow, I got a lot to live up with there, because that's a hell of an introduction. Versus, you know. But thanks a lot. I enjoy it. You know, I look up to you guys, your show here with for manufacturers. I mean, that, you know, that's where I started. That's what I love, you know, building things. And it's always been that. So thanks a lot for having me.
We're so thrilled. Why don't we just jump right in? What do you see? Now, I've been on the both sides of the desk for acquisitions as well as selling manufacturing businesses, and it's never been pleasant. The outcome was never what was expected going into it. What do you see as the biggest misconception that manufacturing company owners have about the value of their business?
Well, it's for them, it's a passion. It's a passion decision, right? For them to sell a business is a big deal. There's a lot of feelings and emotional decision for them, right? Mm-hmm. But on the buyer side, it's not as much emotional when it gets down to it as it is financial. So really, the biggest thing when it comes to the value of the business is, it doesn't matter if I'm selling my business and I think it's worth $25 million. Mm-hmm. Do the numbers tell me that that a buyer can buy it for $25 million and make the return that they want to make? That's really what your value is based on. It comes down to numbers. I don't care if you got the best equipment in the world or mediocre equipment that gets the job done. That makes very little difference. Mm-hmm. It comes down to, do you have good customers? Do you have a solid company? And then, do you have the money to fund that value? It's really that simple. It's that simple.
So it's the fundamentals. It's optimizing the blocking and tackling.
Yeah. That's for sure.
And on multiple occasions, I know you found ways to generate explosive growth.
Yes.
Revenue and profitability for companies that you've run and advised. So what's the key to making that happen? And what's the number one thing that will prevent it from happening?
The key to making it happen, I really think, is you gotta understand your customer better, because oftentimes what you find is that if you make your business more efficient, but you don't have your customer in mind, you're really not going to help yourself in the market. So understanding your customer, the market you play in, and where you're at in that market and how you provide value in that market is the first thing. And I'll run through a quick example in a really generic business, right? So I used to run a smaller sheet metal company, sheet metal manufacturing, lasers, bending, welding, powder coating. Anybody in manufacturing has seen them a million times. That equipment's very easy to schedule, run overnight, you know, sheet loaders, all the good stuff that you got for that. And one of the things that we did in that business that created just explosive growth was, we took our lead time from about 3 or 4 weeks if you're really busy, down to 5 days with most of our customers that were repeat customers, because we went back through our process and we said, hey, basically we've got all these customers to buy all this stuff, but it goes down into gauges of material, right? Thicknesses of material, types of material. Well, if I get stuff today and I have all my business processes lined up, I can program my stuff today. I can run it tonight. I can bend it, weld it, whatever I do in the next couple days, it's out the door in 3 or 4 or 5 days, right? It's not a lot of time to get that stuff done if you get your processes. Well, our customers really needed that because they wanted to be able to reduce their inventory, keep, you know, more just in time and doing those kind of things. But no one else really had that figured out without using inventory and Kanbans and some other things. We took the Kanban all the way back to the sheet stock. We had no money in fabricated assemblies laying around, inventory, nothing like that, until, because if you compress that whole time, the whole chain gets more efficient. And that's really what you have to work on. And, you know, I've done it in product-based companies where you've got big assemblies and factories and stuff like that, where you work on the entire business process along with lean manufacturing, and you'll do things where you take, you know, weeks out of your lead time, which if you can, if you're in an industry where your lead time is 6 weeks and you figure out how to do something in two, which I truly believe that 50% reduction in lead time is something you can always do, unless you've done one of these exercises. You have a significant advantage over your competitors. And once your customers get used to that, like in the sheet mill example, your customers got used to 5 day lead time. That people don't usually do that in that kind of, at least at that time in that kind of industry. And that's where you do those things that the value is there, that your competitors are really hard. It's really hard for your competitors to do that. And it's also when you go out and you're quoting new work, your competitors don't know how to quote work like that. And you're like, yeah, it'll be 5 days or whatever that is. That gives you that advantage. In the other example that I brought up with a product-based company, we were doing something that was on nationwide scale and for large companies. And what we were able to do is we were able to reduce their lead time so they could order things more just in time that met their schedule better. But then we were also able to scale up with them or scale down with them much more quickly because they didn't have all this inventory in process that they had to worry about. So it made things much easier. It's making it easier for your customer to buy from you, really, and make it more convenient. And it's outside of the product, because, you know, in those businesses, everybody makes a product, everybody's got process, but really your value is probably making that as efficient as you can and working outside of that.
That's an interesting thing to say, because, you know, we've both been at this long enough and seen enough. Allison as well, she just looks better than us. I've seen a lot of different businesses over time where the default mode, when they either start seeing a competitive threat or a customer saying, listen, for us to run better, we need you to hold more inventory or whatever, the default mode is to get defensive. It's like, nope, you're doing it wrong. If you want that kind of lead time, you've got to pay for buffer inventory on my floor, you know, and all of these things, as opposed to looking internally as you've done in more than one example. We've all experienced it as well. When you look at the problem initially, you know, you start out with, well, we'll get a 20% improvement, and only to find out that you got a 200% improvement.
Yeah.
You know, once you really tore into it, and that's a big leap, you know, making that first step.
Well, yeah. And people thought I was crazy as hell when I did this. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, they looked at me like I was nuts. Yeah. I said, we're going to drop the lead time by, you know, at least 50% in these companies. And they're like, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
I said, listen, add up back to the old lean manufacturing, you know, we've been in this forever. You add up all the value added time, and it's about this much of that much of what you do.
Right.
All we're going to do is try to take that out of the process. And once you start doing it, and you're talking about engineering and purchasing and all the way through that, you go, that's where you get your, you know, that's where you get this stuff.
So circling back, that sounds like an awesome story. If I'm a business owner and I've gone through that exercise, whether I know how to do it myself or you came in and helped us, help them figure out how to do it. That's a story where when you tell that to a prospective investor, you know, it sounds like you've just found a whole bunch of capacity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, number one, you've created a competitive advantage, certainly a threat to your existing, the incumbents. You spoiled the market,
yeah,
which is okay. You know, so. There's a lot of value there.
You're right. You spoil the market. And what you do then is you've taken that leap ahead. Now, you can't make quantum leap improvements every day. But if I take that model that's made that big jump ahead and I continuously work on it, you're going to be able to and look at more ways around the edges to make better value or better decisions, make it easier for your customer. You're going to stay ahead of everyone else. They're going to be scratching their head for years.
Yeah.
It's those 1% better every day.
Yeah.
Scenarios, right? And if you can improve your process and your people and, you know, operation, everything and everything working together, 1% every day, that magnifies beyond 365%, you know, over the course of a year. It's extraordinary.
Exactly. And when it's customer focused, this is the thing that you don't really understand, or once you've seen it, you really understand it, but you don't see it because I'm measuring what happens in my business and, you know, and how that affects my business. I can go 50% faster. But what you don't see then is how that affects your entire market, because when you're coming to market with some advantage like that, it's going to drive your business growth like crazy, because as Ray said, you've got them satisfied, or whatever I said, you made them very happy is what you can do. Yeah. You've created that advantage for yourself that no one else can create. Yeah. And that buzz spreads quickly. Yeah. And the next thing you know, you're talking to new clients just because of that advantage you created.
Let me throw a hypothetical at you, Dan. I'm a business owner and say, you know what, this sounds fantastic, but you know, how many millions of dollars is it going to take me to be able to do that in my factory? I can't afford to do that.
Oh, I bet you can. I bet you can, because I'm cheap as heck when you do this, because it's not millions of dollars. This is all fundamental stuff. It doesn't, you know, I'll tell you, through all the changes I've ever made, I think there's been a few software changes I've had to do, and of course, factory moving stuff around, but you know, get a forklift and do that kind of stuff. Mm. It's really fundamental, basic things. We're not talking about a gazillion dollar computer system. We're not talking about some new whiz bang piece of equipment, because I can guarantee you that is not the bottleneck in your factory. That is not the thing that's holding you up. Hey, in manufacturing, there's so many people in manufacturing that are equipment junkies that want to buy that next $10 million piece of equipment or $1 million. Love it. It's cute, shiny, beautiful, goes so fast. But if you're not using it 100%, or the thing right behind it can't keep up,
right,
don't spend the money. You know, yep. This stuff is more nuts and bolts than this.
Yeah. And we've both run factories and, yeah, that first big leap usually happens with the resources you already have.
Exactly.
It's just you got to think differently to get going, right?
Yeah.
Well, and
just driving out that time.
Yeah.
Usually happens from within, right? Like when you were talking, it made me think of an analogy of, you know, I'm always working on myself, right, as a person, so that I can then have an effect on my team and then my customers, right? So I feel like what you're saying ties into sort of that self-help mindset that I had a mentor once and he said, people come to me every day and they say, Steve, how do I fill in the blank? How do I, you know, grow my business by 200%? How? And he would always stop them and say, let's slow down a minute. First of all, why do you want to do that thing? When the why is clear, the hows will appear all around you. But before you look outside, start inside. And I feel like that's exactly what you're saying, is that this incremental change, or even maybe some, I don't know what the enormous change, really doesn't have to take a multi-million dollar machine or hiring new staff. You can start with what you have.
Exactly.
Do something.
You can start with what you have, because I'll guarantee when you look at any business, any process, you know, the thing is in the manufacturing plants, that's, you know, people worked on lean manufacturing for years and they've talked about it a little bit in business. But when you take an approach that starts with the customer contacting you and goes until they receive whatever you deliver and look at how can I make that better from them from end to end and look at every single step along the way, including getting your damn money, because that people forget about that. You've got to be able to do that. And when you get that easy and get it compressed as much as you can, you'll be surprised how many chunks of time and wasted effort and money you can take out of that to make yourself more efficient. And, you know, you people don't understand. Well, I should say this. It's contradictory to think that you can go faster and do all these stuff and do all these things like this and reduce your costs. I mean, in the product company that I mentioned, we actually went from about an 8-week lead time to a 10-day business lead time, and we reduced the cost of the products by about 40%. So it took redesign. Yeah, it took lean manufacturing. Yeah, it took our engineers working with the purchasing people to commonize products, all different kinds of stuff like that. But I'll tell you, the overall spend was in time with people that were already in the business while we were doing business. It wasn't like we had hired 27 consultants that worked on this night and day. It was like the people worked on it as part of their job, and we did this over a fairly short period of time. It's going back to the fundamentals, as Ray said.
That's awesome. That's great insights. You know, we're in a really unique time right now. Is the COVID-induced disruption that's going on right now an opportunity or a threat for manufacturing companies today? How are you reading the tea leaves?
Well, you know what? There's a couple things that I see that it really, really showed us the fragility of the global supply chain, right? Because when it started, people that understand the supply chain and our dependence on offshore sourcing for a lot of our products didn't realize, the average consumer didn't realize what was coming, right? Because the fact that when the people in China were getting sick and they were shutting down factories there, we had about X amount of weeks before it hit us. The product didn't get here, right?
Right.
And I don't think they understood that. And when you have you go down to the store and you can't buy this or you can't get that, I mean, it showed up fairly quickly.
Yeah.
So I think that what it's going to do long term is, A, as a nation or any nation in the world, it really has to think about, are we going to keep part of our capacity localized or more geographically centric? Because can we really afford to go that long without the medical products that we didn't have and the things like that that you really need? You know, the cool part about it is we saw a lot of companies come together to really make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I think the localization is where it's going to come back.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some of that. You know, you have to be cost competitive. And what we didn't see behind the scenes are things like the masks and gowns and stuff that we couldn't get they're driving that price down, as you go, okay, we go to this part of the world, we go to that part of the world, just chasing that lowest cost. You know, we can't do that for everything forever.
Right.
Because when you run into things that you absolutely need, that you have to be able to get them.
Yeah.
Yep. We weren't ready for it.
Yep. That's true. How are you seeing in terms of the businesses your clients or the people you talk to and interface with on LinkedIn? How are you seeing their responses? Are you seeing an uptick? Is, you know, an uptick in terms of, you know, innovation? Have people shaken off the, this is terrible. I'm going to wait till things get better. Are people kind of accepting and seeing this may be a new reality, so this is how we're going to roll? How are you seeing things out there?
Undoubtedly, people have come to terms with this isn't going to just be, the rainstorm that passes and it dries right out and the sun comes back out. I mean, it's not that, and people are realizing that now.
Yeah.
I think there still are a lot of people though that I've talked to that are thinking that this is going to be something that there's going to go back to normal. And a lot of things cause us to think that, and some are emotional and some are factual. but it's not going to be the same. Yeah. And that's the thing that I hear. And the people that are embracing the new way of working from remote, remote to the fact that we're, you know, they're may not be able to have all the people in the office all the time, or their product is no longer in demand. You know, you look at some of these things. I would hate to be in the commercial real estate industry right now, because I truly believe there's going to be a significant downturn in the amount of commercial real estate that's needed, because the ability to work remotely allows you to source your talent from different places. And I'm not talking about offshoring talent. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm just talking about if you've got a business in Chicago and you can hire better people in Des Moines who are still in your same time zone, but they're more talented, you just don't have access to them sitting there in your office. Why not?
Yeah.
That's the thing that's so cool about this, is it proved that works. And I think that, but I think generally people have adapted. They're adapting to what they need to do. You look at the delivery companies and the manufacturing companies that I know that ran right through this.
Right.
I mean, they had a hell of a time keeping going just because what do you do? What the heck do you do when you got 500 people rolling in every morning at 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
And if, you know, one or two of those people are sick, and you know how it is in manufacturing. I mean, some of these places, these meat packing plants, you're literally bumping elbows when you're working, right?
Yeah.
No wonder they had a hell of a time with it.
Yeah, those lines aren't built for 6 foot spacing. You know?
Yeah. There's no social distancing on a meat packing line, I tell you that. And that's the thing that I'm amazed at. They've had to adapt all this stuff and come through it and figure these things out. Yeah. You know, even some of our distribution customers that you know, I'll see them, a place will go down. They've had to learn how to reroute to another place for a couple of days until they get clean, start back up. There's all kinds of things that they're just learning how to adapt and overcome.
How to do that?
That's
again.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. I got one more question for you. I want to kind of put a bow on where we've been so far. So, independent of the environment that we're in, good times or bad, lots of technology or not, a significant chunk of value that can be generated for the current owner or future buyers of a business revolves around customer focus, blocking and tackling.
Oh yeah.
So if you start there and work backwards, you're gonna find your way to value.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. You know, some of the things that I've seen are really cool lately is, well, customer focus, right? Is getting your avatar, knowing them really well, knowing their challenges, like we never did before. You know, hell, when I started selling was you just go out and talk to people until you sell some stuff, right? You know, you try to hit the right, and now it's so much different. But you also see too how you can be so much better at helping your customers if you really know them better and know their problems.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. The customer focus is really something. And you know, in manufacturing specifically, I'm really excited. I think that if manufacturers now start to embrace e-commerce because it's becoming so prolific, that there are huge upticks for them. I don't care what you're making. I don't care if it's a product you're making, if you've got a service that you're doing. You know, there's just so many different ways that you could use the e-commerce platforms that are available to really expand your business, make it easier for your customers. Because again, that customer focus, making that journey easier, finding you, getting what they need.
Right. Right. Well, it's funny, you know, you and I crossed paths at a webinar from our friend, Kurt Anderson, you know, a fan of MFG Out Loud and a whiz in B2B e-commerce, he's every time you talk to that guy, he's like a shot of espresso.
The other day he goes, so I guess you're tired of listening to me. I said, hell no, I learned new stuff from you every time, you know?
Exactly.
I'm more jacked up about it.
How about, well, I talked to him earlier today and preview alert for our listeners out there is Kurt's going to be joining us real soon to share his enthusiasm on e-commerce. But you're absolutely right. There are a lot more levers to pull now than there used to be.
Oh,
that's the thing.
Oh, it's just like another arrow in that quiver you can pull out and use.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I know we don't understand it. Listen, people that are above the age of 50 don't understand this stuff typically as much as younger people do. But embrace it. See what it'll do. It'll help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Explore. Hey, we're getting to the end, and we want to switch gears a bit because this is really important, and I don't want to let you go without asking you about your business roundtable. And okay. I would love to know what sparked the idea and how it's been going.
Well, I'll be real honest with you. We were sitting here. I woke up in the middle of the night. It was in February or March when this started, whenever it was, and it started. And I was thinking to myself, all these business owners that are getting affected by this are just sitting there with the pit in their stomach, just burning a hole. And I'm going, what in the hell am I going to do? And I was thinking about, most of my career was spent doing turnarounds in businesses, and you were in the same spot, right? You didn't have enough cash. Sales were going like hell. Probably your operations were, you're just in a bad situation. And I thought, if I can do anything with them, I can tell them I've been there before. It's not going to be that bad, but one step or one foot in front of the other and do your best and you'll be okay. And we started talking to people. We started talking about cash flow. We started talking about get your PPP loan, do your stuff like that. Don't be afraid to cut everything that's non-essential. I know it hurts. I know it's going to affect, you know, people you care dearly about, but do that. And it really just started from there. And then we started to get, I was like, well, you know, there was two people, then there was five people, then pretty soon there's 20, then there's 30. And then we're like, okay, let's, now I feel pressure. I've got to get people that really know what the heck they're doing, you know, talking about this, because I was just kind of hoping I could help a few people. And it's been a lot of fun with us, because now I like to solicit ideas from people, or I'll have people talk to me about ideas for the show, because, hey, we just want it to be a good place where people come share information. And for us, the Remo platform is really interesting, because it's remo.co. It's you come in, you have a little, it's a six person at a table networking kind of thing in the beginning. We got 30 minutes before we do a presentation, takes us about an hour, and we have panels and different things that go on, and a lot of interaction from the audience, and then a little bit of networking at the end. I really like that, because it's more like going somewhere and doing a networking event, but you don't have to go anywhere. I mean, we can't now.
Yeah.
But you can do it across the globe. I mean, we have people we had someone in there from South Africa. We've had people in the UK and a lot of people from India in there every week. That's and awesome. It's just a lot of fun. Well, for me, it gives me a reason to reach out and talk to people like you guys. I mean, and I'll go crazy too. I don't care. If someone tells me to go talk to the CEO of this company and see if they'll come and talk, I reach out to them. Yeah. I try to find their email, talk to them, see what's going on.
There you go.
Because it's fun.
And they've been great. The ones I've sat in on and heard, it's phenomenal content. So we're gonna put that in the show notes so everybody knows where to find you. And guarantee you we're gonna double your audience. But it's worth the time and effort to go check that out.
That's been fun with it.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I think we're at a point we got to wrap up. Yeah. We're gonna include the links to Damon in the show notes. And if you can't wait for that, you can find Damon on LinkedIn. Check out his website at exityourway.us. Yeah. Damon, thanks so much for sharing your perspective and insights with us today. Always a pleasure to get together. Yes. And we learn something every time we talk.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, and as always, if you are not already subscribed to MFG Out Loud, you need to get your butt over there and do that. And right. Share caring. So tell a colleague to come over here and get real already. And join our courageous conversation. And as always, we want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this. Damon, we can't thank you enough. It's been a treat. And hey, everybody listening, keep manufacturing out loud. We need you. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to MFG Out Loud with Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore. You can subscribe and find show notes at mfgoutloud.com.